Hi, everybody, and welcome to Adventures in Artslandia. I'm Susanna Mars, and it is Women's History Month this month, and March 8th is International Women's Day. And so in honor of that, I have three amazing women. I have Asai Dean, Michelle Fuji, and Yanni Berkshire, three artists in our community who are producing provocative work in all sorts of exciting ways. Hi, you guys.
Hi.
Michelle, you're co-director and an artist of a taiko ensemble called Unit Sozo.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
You put that phonetically for me, which I really appreciated.
Of course.
And you're a fourth generation Japanese American.
Mm-hmm. I am.
And Ayana, you are my darling friend, of course, who I'm an artistic compatriot with at Artist Repertory Theater. We're both resident artists. We just did a show, A Civil War Christmas. And she recently relocated from Los Angeles, where she was working mostly in television. And as an actress, she says that she still struggles to find a happy balance between financial security and artistic fulfillment. And we were just, before we started recording, all kind of commiserating on that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Especially in a market like Portland, where, you know, you have so much beauty around you and great energy, but we still are working to, you know, hit our, I think, united financial stride here.
Right, I agree. And Asai, you are the co-conceiver of Salt and Sage Productions, which is dedicated to foregrounding the female experience. And you're exploring the personal and political dimensions of sexuality and providing space for actor training to foster personal and artistic growth. Hi.
Hi.
I just want to thank you guys all for coming today. And we're here at Hotel Deluxe enjoying this lovely tea that they supply us with once a month. And I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about what it's like. I mean, and really the question that Ayana brings up in the first place is, how do you do the dance? And Asai, you and I were talking about it before Ayana came.
Yes, we started from the standpoint of like, let me see how many bags I have here with me.
Right.
Right, I have however many bags I have lives for today.
Exactly.
Yes.
It is such a it's such a trick to leave the house ready for everything you got to do.
Yes.
You know, I was in my car before you guys came learning a dialect that I've never done. That was hard. But I'm also curious, what drew you to the arts in the first place?
Well, you know, I was really confused in high school and trying to figure out who I was and what it was I was going to do with my life. I had done things artistic or musical and dance-oriented, but it wasn't anything that stuck with me. But it was this really auspicious milestone where I was asked to do a paper about sort of my identity. And someone said, oh, you kind of do some music, you do, and you're Japanese American, what about taiko? And I was like, oh yeah, I've heard of it, I've seen it, sure.
Where were you growing up?
I grew up in San Jose, California.
Okay.
And I was very fortunate that there was a taiko group, and little did I know it was actually one of the pioneers of taiko here in North America. And I just went, and as I interviewed them, they said, you should just try it. How are you going to know about it unless you do it yourself? And for me, it was taking that first workshop and realizing that there was something to this.
Now, just for people who don't know what taiko is,
oh, yes.
I mean, I had the great pleasure many years ago of doing like a workshop with kids where Portland Taiko came,
mm-hmm.
and I just was so drawn to it because of the physicality of it. Can you describe it a little bit?
Right. The taiko is drum. So in itself, we celebrate on these very large drums. The history of taiko, of course, resonates and originates from Japan, but also celebrates a very long history here in North America as well, a rich history. And it's the art form brings these big drums sort of together, and it's through the unity of people playing even just one sound that this art form really comes alive.
Oh, it does, because it's that vibrancy is insane. When you feel the physicalness of those people descending on the drums, and then that vibration,
mm-hmm.
it's just the coolest thing.
Thanks.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
So Asai, how did you get the art bug?
Oh, I had the art bug probably since I was in the room. I mean, I just like, I started reading young and I wanted to be a writer was where I started in the arts. Like as an elementary school child, I wanted to be a writer because I loved books so much and language. But then, again in high school where you're, figuring out who am I? What do I want to be? Also, how do I deal with all these other people?
Did you grow up here in Portland?
I did not. I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Wow, we're a whole table of relocators.
Yes. So in high school, I did some theater and went, oh, I love this. I really love this. And so it's just been theater ever since. And directing very strongly early on, I think just because, like, it's just such a privilege to witness other artists do their thing, and I feel like as a director I get to facilitate that, and it's just I love rehearsal, so I'm just the super fan who wants to see every rehearsal, and luckily I get, that is my job in directing, is to be at every rehearsal and present.
Ayana, I know you've been doing this for a long time, like since you were a kid. So how did you decide you were gonna, make it your career?
I was talking with my housemate last night. We were talking about how we got into the arts. She's an artist as well. And I was first really drawn to the arts from a strictly pragmatic place. I remember very vividly asking my grandmother about Shirley Temple. I was exposed to very little television and movies. She was an artist, but she introduced me to Shirley Temple, and I was kind of mesmerized by this kid, but also her importance. She felt important in a moment, and she explained to me how during the Great Depression and this time where the country was just hurting so deeply, she, as an artist, was bringing so much joy to everybody. And the joy part connected with me, as well as the idea that if the entire country is out of business, here is somebody who is working. And so from a really young age,
wow,
that really stuck with me, that it was almost like job security.
Well, surely if any, I mean, not surely as in Temple,
surely.
Right? But surely if there was any time that might be a testament to that, it's kind of now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and now Dave is bringing tea, so it's perfect timing to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Perfect.
Well, we're back, and I kind of feel bad for you guys because we were having a fantastic conversation, so we'll just reopen it. We were on topics such as how does an artist make a living here in this town? What art is good for, how we can connect through art, and of course, with politics such as they are, it feels like, especially International Women's Day coming up, such a great way to get to know each other through the stories that we tell. And do any of you guys have like a place to jump from on that note? It's kind of a...
It's a big one.
It's a big one, right? I mean, it really is. It was interesting. I learned something about Tycho that I didn't know recently, and that was that in the 1950s, during the Civil Rights Movement, that Tycho kind of came to life in America at that time. Do you know much about that?
Yeah, well, the group that I started from in San Jose Tycho, I mentioned in my introduction that it was one of the pioneer groups, and they were the third group to start here, and actually were started by Asian American activists. They were trying to find a voice here in the United States at a time where I think many people of color were trying to figure out where are they in this American landscape. And
so different from today.
Right. Exactly.
Wow, having things changed.
So this is the question. Yeah. But that's when I started playing. I feel that they put that inside of me, too. that the things that taiko, the reason why it became so popular here in the United States is because it was breaking stereotypes of what is an Asian, quiet, meek. Taiko is the exact opposite. It's loud, it's proud, it's like you've got to notice me. Additionally, just at the time, many Japanese Americans were fighting for reparations for the World War II internment of Japanese Americans. My grandparents were four of them, and so at that time it needed to be a very powerful voice, and taiko oftentimes was accompanied in many of those rallies, a rallying cry. So the answer is absolutely, like, for me, my lineage is definitely from that story, and from that story I continue it.
It's such an exciting art form,
yeah.
And it does, as you say, just say, here I am.
Yeah.
Here I am.
And I think that still needs to resonate. It resonates, I think, for many people. It's not just Asian Americans now that are playing taiko. It's any person who goes to the drum and becomes empowered. And oftentimes, I know many of my students say that when they first got to the drum, it felt like they had a voice that could get that before they didn't know they had, that could start to come out maybe a little bit more,
yeah.
And more. And that's one of the reasons why I love to see, even we teach in schools, to see young children go to the drum and bring their delight, but also realize, wow, I'm much more powerful than I thought maybe I was. So, yes, taiko has a very strong, strong voice.
I love that. I love it so much. I was talking again with my friend Kelly last night about voice.
Yeah.
And,
And she's mixed. She's Japanese American, Caucasian American, and I think that idea as women, you know, I certainly came from a place where it was very much a people pleaser, and that was certainly instilled in me from, I think, our society and our mothers and grandmothers in this society. That's where our power lay, actually, was in being demure and genteel and kind and always going above and beyond and facilitating, you know, being there to take care of the needs of other people. And we're at this place where universally, as individuals, we're being asked to show our strength and be strong. For women, you know, again, you know, not burning bras, but being vocal and, you know, marching and really taking a stand and showing power. And I love that idea of the drum. I used to do hand drums and percussion, and it is so powerful. It is a wonderful way to express. And Susanna, you were talking about that vibration that goes through you and the power of those drums and just feeling that through every cell of your body. It's just really exceptional. And I think that's it's wonderful to put the physical to that metaphysical there and see that outward expression of that voice in such a dynamic way.
You might need to take some taiko lessons.
I want to take some taiko lessons.
Aside.
Oh, no, it's okay. Yeah. I'm just wondering, I mean, this question that comes to my mind is, in terms of story and, you know, you're a theater maker, as is Ayana, what story have you told recently that expressed a voice that you felt really needed to be heard? I know you have a show that just opened this last weekend. Is there, I mean, I would venture there's probably a voice in that story that...
Yeah, I was, I was reflecting as Michelle was talking on how there's really this need in this moment, like, to affirm not only who you are and that you are here and that you matter, but also that the various rights that, like, our foremothers have fought for and won, Or that even, like, we have fought for and won, or our activist friends have fought for and won, that those were, like, worthwhile victories that we don't want lost. And there's this moment toward the end of the play I just opened. It's a play called, it's a new play for four women called Meet Me in the Dark. And there's this line where one of the mothers is coming to terms with not so much her daughter's sexuality as more just the fact, you know, all the emotions around, you know, her daughter figuring that out separate from her and, you know, not being the first person to know and what that relationship really is. But there's this line where she's trying to talk about it with a friend and she says something along the lines of, like, referring to marriage equality. You know, she says, like, you know, a lot, there's been all these big, big changes, most for the worse, but some for the better. This one, it's a better world with this one. And that one's just been really potent for me lately because of so much of what is so dark about our political time, of thinking like, wow, those moments do feel maybe more precious and rare than they even did, like, 9 months ago when this play came to me in its infancy. Like, it had a very different resonance then than it does now. When she says, you know, it's a better world with this one, and you think, okay, so we're going to preserve that one, and how do we add to those ones?
I have a question for you, because one of the things that's been coming up for me often is this idea of unity and this openness now to hearing other people's voices and taking up their causes. I think being mixed African-American and Caucasian-American, seeing from the Black perspective, the attention and interest and really taking up that battle cry for, you know, for minorities, for, you know, for women, for you name it, for trans, you name it. And I feel like we're in such a unique and wonderful time. And that idea of not losing something and building on that one element. I mean, how has that connected, or have you felt that connection in working on your play?
Yeah, I mean, I felt a real hunger for a while now, but even more so is like, okay, I've found, you know, we start from us, you know, so like as storytellers, we start from our truth, right? And so, like, and it takes us often so long to find that, but then, like, once you kind of feel like, okay, I've kind of arrived, like, I'll have to arrive again because the work's never over, but I know who I am, and I'm able to help other people to show who they are, you then go, okay, how do I facilitate that for other people and bring in more stories, including the stories that, like, I'm not sure how to tell. And that's one of the things that really interests me right now as an artist, is, like, you know, how to facilitate in the room a story, you know, that somebody else has more authority to tell, and make sure that they're empowered to say that and bring that forward in the work.
Well, that's something I've been thinking about a lot, because what I'm realizing as I learn more and more, I watch, you know, 13th, the Ava DuVernay documentary, or I watch I Am Not Your Negro, you know, by Raoul Peck. I feel that for some crazy reason, which I'm not sure I know why yet, or if I ever will, there have been stories that have been withheld from us as a culture, maybe as a world even, and it's almost as though it's our personal responsibility to start digging into these stories. I mean, the fact that your grandparents were Japanese internment survivors, these are real stories about what it was really like. Now, that story has been told to some degree, but of course needing so much more light shed on it. But look at all the stories that have never... What the heck? It took Hidden Figures to tell us about these African-American women who literally sent men to the effing moon? I mean, what the heck? So how do we start to unearth these treasures? Who do we shake loose, right?
Well, and I think looking at the stories that are happening around us right now, in the moment, one of our fellow castmates from the Civil War Christmas had just posted recently that she's, her dad is, worried about his visa status. He's prepping his family in the instance that he's going to be deported. You know, she's 30, her family's been together here for however long, and she's really, really concerned. And that is happening now. Those are those stories that, you know, I don't know. And how do we not become overwhelmed and overburdened by everything that's happening around us in this real heartache? I feel heartache every time, every day. And how do we overcome that to stay mobilized and to stay keyed in and to not want to turn away from those stories? Because I think we reach a threshold and then we say, okay, I just need to focus on me and what pleases me. And again, back to that Shirley Temple entertainment.
Right, that's why La La Land hit me this season, you know? I just felt kind of angry about it. I'm
so mad about it.
I don't want to be a big boo-hoo lady, but, you know, I thought, I grew up in the Hollywood film world. My dad was an actor. I love the movies. I couldn't love the movies more. But I felt as though back in the 30s, we didn't know better. I don't know. I just felt like no nod. I just
want to high five you right now.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, La La Land, because you're beautiful in your way of pretending that things are okay right now. Mm-hmm. But I just don't feel good about it.
No. I mean, I don't even think that 5 years ago, 10 years ago,
that movie should have been made in the way that it was made. I just have such a hard time with it. And I didn't watch the Academy Awards this year because I was sure that it was going to win Best Film. And I was so angry about it. And then found out, of course, that Moonlight won, which is phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
Such an incredible movie. We saw that together.
Yeah, and that movie just
the first time
knocked me out.
Yeah.
The beauty of it.
Yeah. Talk about storytelling. Just absolute poetry.
And to tell a story in a way so unusual. Mm-hmm. To tell a story, you know, we're so trained. Mm-hmm.
This is a story about a very unfortunate person.
Yeah.
It's like, uh-uh. Didn't go down that path. Mm-hmm. Lifted up regular life to to art.
Yeah.
To Renoir. I mean, mm-hmm. to... Gee. I liked it. Any movies you've seen recently that you feel that passionate about, Michelle?
Well, I think I just agree with you. I mean, like, honestly, you really brought out some of the more prominent movies that I'm like, yes, yes.
Yeah, I Am Not Your Negro, I just saw. It's incredible. How about you in the film world?
I never see movies. Literally ever. I see maybe one film a year. It just... In all the cultural things, it's just not my thing. I do want to see I Am Not Your Negro, though, because, like, James Baldwin is one of those writers who in times of trouble I read, and I have since high school. Like, just the man was such a genius and never ceases to have relevance and brilliance and things to say to you right now that apply right now. And it kind of doesn't matter, like, what you're coming to him because you need, you know, he talked about all. Love, sex, race, equality, income, like, everything. I just, yeah.
And now when you look back and you listen to him speak about it, it's like he was a prophet.
Yeah.
You think, what? The plight of the black man is the plight of our country. Now, I'm completely, that's not a quote. Oh, God, don't get at me. But, I mean, it just blew my socks off that he... so aptly put, and to my mind you can even take that out further, and I know, you know, we'll all be in agreement on this. You know, do unto others as you do unto yourself. I mean, we're one, for heaven's sake. But yeah. So there's a lot of stories out there, but you know.
But I think something you said that I think maybe Susanna did a better job answering your question.
Oh God.
Of in terms of like right now and this moment where there's so much energy around picking up each other's fight and each other's war cry, is like maybe it's that thing of like, you know, what in real life, you know, without pretending that things are good, but, you know, what are the things that are there that, to celebrate about, you know, real life. And sometimes that's pain, but still, like, when a person can show up in their pain and express it, and but also still have joy, like, that's beautiful. That's a freaking example of how to be a human.
That's that, that I so agree with that. I'm curious, Ayana, a role that maybe lifted up a story or a person that brought something to you that, that, you know, kind of speaks to what we're talking about.
In general, or that I've played, or that...
Whatever, like, all of a sudden you're like, that's the answer.
That's it.
That's it.
You know, I think... Boy, I keep... I wish I had, like, a definitive pat answer, but, you know, I think what we're seeing now and the idea of film and television and the stories that are being told, I think we're veering more towards that courageous, more towards really speaking the truth. And, again, I think Moonlight did a beautiful job of doing that. It was... There were a lot of beautiful, unexpected moments because it was absolutely true, and there were no, I don't know, I think any time a character is able to cut through the bullshit and just speak from this grounded, beautiful place is what I hold up as, yes, thank you.
I think you've hit on something, and it's kind of what Asai said as well, and that is that when someone speaks from their truth, like, no matter how ugly or how, I mean, yes, that's really the wrong word, but painful, yes, like, to what our culture accepts as pretty, that's, I mean, when we're working as actors and when we're all working as artists, I mean, the thing that fuels Tycho may not come from a place of, wow, that was awesome, but then it bears fruit that's beautiful.
I think as I, you know, as we're talking around the table, one of the things that we really are focusing on, as there's always three words that guide us in our company that we shift every year, and one of the words that we selected was listening. And it wasn't from the listening as just like kind of an observer, but a really active listener to, on the level of course, playing drums, how do we listen and hear each other? So there's that level, but also the level of listening to each other's lives and stories. What's happening right now within our ensemble? But then on a kind of expansion of this, what's happening in our community? What is starting, what are we listening to that's happening in wider networks? And then how does that come through in the expression of the sound and the rhythms that we choose? And sometimes I feel like there's a lot of talk versus actually really spending the time to absorb what is happening to me right next door to me. And so that's been really resonating with us and wanting to go out, even to go out within our own community and listen more, talk less.
Mm-hmm. I feel that way about this conversation, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, thanks, Susanna, for bringing us together. It's, yeah, that seems to be the key right now. It's, I come back to everybody being in pain or really feeling the struggle and feeling unsure, but still needing to make art, still needing to connect with people, still needing to prove resiliency and courage, and we're ever adapting and ever evolving, you know, and it'll be interesting to see where our next stretch of evolution goes, but this is really stretching all of us to have fuller hearts, I hope, and
be brave in, like, asking your friends of color, hey, I think I don't like what's happening. What can I do? I mean, I remember when we were working on Civil War Christmas, you know, there were questions that I had and other people, and, you know, you have to kind of bone up on your stuff. you can't keep asking, you can't ask your friends of color, okay, what's that? That it, you know, you're not my official guide to life. There's lots of things you can read, you can take, you can ask for suggestions, you can, but then take the bull by the horns and step up and do the work to find out what you don't know so that you can be a person who takes people into account. It's almost like you said about listening. You are creating a world for yourself where you've heard some other things before you dive into your opinion.
And I also think that people want to feel listened to.
Yeah.
That's why for me it's an important thing to sometimes just really absorb. So that someone feels like we took that time. We're so busy nowadays that we run around, but to just sort of take that breath and to really make that impactful relationship together. So, place that I stand right now.
It's a beautiful place.
Thank you.
Like it opens up our capacity to understand and connect with other people.
Yeah.
Just to stand and hold space and
be present for that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's a beautiful place to stop. Maybe we should have a moment of silence.
I have a question.
You have a question? Well, forget it. We're not stopping. Ayana, kill it with a question.
You know, it's been really wonderful seeing, again, looking at National Women's Month and the strength in sisterhood, especially right now. And I really want to take a second just to acknowledge the contributions and the strength of men as well, because I'm finding that my attentions and my comfort are going to women, and then I'm looking around saying, where are the men in my life? And, you know, am I losing touch with them? What do you think about that, David?
David just came to fill the teapots, and he's now been asked a question about what it's like to be a man when women, for Women's History Month. How do you feel? Do you feel neglected right now as a man?
Absolutely not. No.
Right.
No. I think Women's History should be much more than a month.
Yes. This is why we like David. You see?
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely.
I will say something about in terms of like our liberation, depending on each other's liberation, is like, as much as we may have heard that over the years, but is like why it's so true is that, I just think men and women are a great example, because so much of what homophobia and transphobia is about, right, is actually about not valuing things that our culture associates as female or belonging to women. And so much of where men don't get permission to like be the full beautiful human beings they are is because we've told them, like, repress that part of you because we associate it with something that belongs to women, and women are less than, and that box. And so like for men, like men need women to roar. They need us to be empowered, and like they need to know our history to know theirs and to like have that freedom.
Okay, so men, we like you. Just sum that up. That did that. Okay. Keep going with that man thing. So you're listening to Adventures in Artslandia. I'm Susanna Mars. I'm with Ayana Berkshire, Asai Dean, and Michelle Fuji. And just so you know, just opened at Salt and Sage Theater is Meet Me in the Dark, which is March 2nd through the 19th at the Shoebox Theater at 2110 Southeast 10th Avenue in Portland. For more information, you can go to saltandsageproductions.com. And in the fall of this year, Unit Sozo will premiere Goodbye Yesterday, Atsukari Sama. How did I do with that word?
Okay. I forgot to give you pronunciation.
No, I'm okay. I feel good about it. I want to encourage people who don't know how to pronounce something to give it a shot and then ask for help.
Absolutely.
So give me help.
It's otsukare sama.
Oh my gosh, that's gorgeous. Otsukare sama.
Yes. Thank you.
Darn, that's beautiful. It's going to weave dance and taiko. And for more information, you can go to UNITSOZU. That's UNITSOUZOU. And I think I said it wrong that last time. UNITSOZU.
Yes.
Yes. Golly. Japanese, next on the list of learning. So, and Ayana is going to appear in Artist Rep all-female cast of The Importance of Being Earnest, opening May 16th, and you can find out more at artistrep.org. Thanks so much for coming and listening to Adventures in Artslandia. We enjoyed tea at Hotel Deluxe. Thank you, David, for serving us. Have a great day, and go see a lot of art. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Ha ha ha.